Hello and welcome to They Might Be Mariners, Lookout Landing's prospect-focused podcast. We are here at the end of day two of the MLB draft, which also is the end of the MLB draft this year, which is sad, but we...
Weird. Got, sad,
yeah,
and weird. Weird.
Yeah, feels sort of stunted.
Yeah, abbreviated.
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, it really does feel like... Well, tomorrow there's more, right? You know, we normally blurb individually.
No draft for you. Yeah. No more draft for you.
We normally write up an individual blurb for each of the first 10 rounders, and then we're sort of like, okay, well, like every five guys will write up something. It's like, no, everyone got one. You know, we had a fun day today, tracking the whole draft, but. It's over. How are you guys feeling? Just initial reactions now. We got a few good questions. So I want to get right into those, but just immediate, just gut feelings right now.
I feel good. It's hard to walk away from a draft where you pull, you know, someone with ace potential,
mm-hmm.
like with bad feelings. And I think, you know, we'll get into the day two picks, but I thought Zach DeLoach was a really, really fun pick. So I feel all right.
Mm-hmm. Kate?
I'm mad at myself because I chose to believe that they were going to be truthful when they said we're going to see Kai upside and interpreted that to mean what I wanted it to interpret and not what actually happened, which was, I think, what we would usually see in a very traditional Mariners draft, a lot of the guys we would often see, but without, like, kind of the fringe fun guys. I was a little let down. Usually I'm pretty excited by the second round pick even, and that felt like kind of a compromise.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't enough space to rebound with, like, fun draft or fun prep arms, which at least they've taken prep arms, and there was
no spot for, you know, Michael Limoncelli.
No, there was no Michael Limoncelli, no Tyler Driver, no Adam Machko, nothing.
No DCS.
No. So
nope. I mean, no,
I
no
would
prep.
Say that
no prep. Yeah, no prep. No prep. Period.
It feels very spoiled when you're looking at a draft where you had Emerson Hancock to say, like, I was disappointed by the draft. But I mean, and I'm sure a lot of these guys will grow on me, but I have to say that my overall feelings are kind of like, it was a solid draft. It wasn't a spectacular draft. And other teams who are kind of working with the same amount of money, the same numbers of picks, the same, mm-hmm. you know, did better. Like, I think the St. Louis Cardinals did better. I think the Rockies did better. Like, none of them got an Emerson Hancock, which is, you know, the big takeaway from this. But I like their breadth better than maybe this depth, which I don't think is all that deep.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well, let's go into the questions, because I think we're right up against a couple of things we got here. So on Twitter, Nico Edgar at Nico Edgar 4. Asked, do you feel like the Mariners drafted kind of boring? And I sort of want to pair this because it Alex Potts at Alex Potts 3 sort of went even more sort of in depth on it and said, I feel like they played us. Jerry said the Omar Narvaez trade would give us extra flexibility to take risk. And I did not see a single high upside, quote unquote, risky pick. In fact, rounds 2 through 5 look like they will be under slot. If that's the case, then it's a huge slap in the face to M's fans. Where do you guys fall on this? Do you think it's, you know, boring? You think it's boring and a slap in the face? Do you think Alex is correct in saying that they didn't really take any high upside, risky, you know, toolsy kind of picks?
Mm-hmm. I think the language is a little strong. I don't think we were played, and I don't think it was a major slap in the face per se. I don't remember when Jerry came out and said that with the extra bonus pool money, they can, you know, go a little bit more risky. But what I do know is, when he said that, I think we might still have been in a stage where it was somewhere between 5 and 25 rounds, and I don't know if it had been locked down to 5 rounds yet. I could be wrong in that. But one thing that I take away from this draft is Seattle must think that they are closer to competing than some fans think. Because if you go with... I mean, you look at like Baltimore, and Baltimore had some splashy preps, and Detroit also, you know, way behind the bandwagon. They had some splashy preps, and Milwaukee's on their way to, you know, what looks to be a long rebuild. They had some splashy preps. I think Seattle must think that they're closer to competing than a lot of other people do. I'll say this, though. There can be a philosophical way to approach this draft in that safety is security in a way, because, you know, the Connor Phillips pick is kind of the pick where things shifted, because you're talking about a 19-year-old who's coming from a community college. Granted, he was like one of the best community college pitchers in the country, and he throws 97 and all that, but he's not a name, and he's not someone that we've researched, and he's not someone that, you know, carries a lot of bravado among scouting circles. So I definitely am disappointed in the fact that they didn't draft a prep, and I'm certainly disappointed that they didn't draft a dynamic player up the middle. But I don't know if the language that I would use would be quite so strong. Boring might not be the right word. It might just be safe.
Yeah, I think that the specific quote, because I think this makes sense for Alex, especially in terms of the sort of feeling played of the particular phrasing you used in terms of like a high upside, up the middle player.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, from DePoto. That was like from the front office itself. And that particular phrasing, at least, was like within the last couple months when we knew the draft was going to be, you know, I believe at that point we already knew it was 5 rounds. Certainly we knew it would be no more than 10. That is frustrating, even as
in that, you know, regard. I like it. In that regard, definitely Seattle didn't get, Mariners fans didn't get what they were necessarily marketed to receive, yeah, in this draft. Yeah. And that's frustrating. And you know, the three of us have talked about this on podcasts, and that we're really just waiting for Seattle to take a dynamic up the middle prep. Mm-hmm. That they can grow in center field, shortstop, second base, like,
mm-hmm.
And again, they didn't do it, right. And that's frustrating, even without DePoto's, you know, suggestion that they're going to go that direction. You want to see that at some point, and it's been 5 years.
Yeah, Kate, how do you feel about it?
I mean, I tried to like keep in mind that when they said a dynamic player, they meant what they considered dynamic, like, which is maybe not what I consider dynamic, because they have been operating very much in this very traditional, pretty safe, college-heavy, especially arm-heavy. Like, they know that they can develop pitching, and so, like, why not just get all the pitching? To me, kind of makes sense. If you know that you are one of the top 5 clubs in baseball, and Eno Saris from The Athletic has said he believes the Mariners are one of the top 5 clubs in baseball at developing pitching. So if you know you're elite at that, get pitching, develop it, trade it for what you can't develop, or trade it for what you need. And I think that there's a certain logic to that, but also trades are risky, and, you know, we've seen kind of some good outcomes from trades and some not good outcomes from trades. So that strategy makes me worry. It makes me worry that, like, we're tilting too far towards this safe college arm tons of arms in the system. No, who will play the positions? You know, they use their second round pick on an outfielder, and I know a lot of people aren't happy about that because that is one position that we've got a fair amount of. Like, we're pretty weak on the infield. And even if you look at what we've done internationally, so typically middle infield prospects / center fielders come from the international pool, right? But we don't have any shortstops, like premium shortstops in the international pool. We have Noel V. Marte, who maybe sticks it short. He is a project. I watched him take ground balls, and it was a little scary. I mean, he was over at second, but...
And he's probably 4, maybe 5 years away, even in that circumstance.
He's that many years away. But,
well, like, he was probably going to, like, start in Everett this year, right?
Yeah,
like,
I think his bat is going to force his way. So there are some fun things coming up. There's Starlin Aguilar, who's going to be signed this year, theoretically. Also a third baseman, though. So, like, there's this crew. There's Jonathan Classe in center field. Like, there is a crew moving through the DSL, and that's where you get, typically, your most dynamic players who are not drafted out of high school are going to come from your international side. So I guess what I want to see them do is I want to see them commit more internationally, be riskier, go after guys who are, like, kind of listed in that top 10, as opposed to this strategy that they've used of, like, the very unfortunate phrase, penny slots. Fine, play to your strengths, but it's not a super inspiring draft when you look at what was taken. And I think maybe it's a little bit the, like, eating your vegetables, right? Like, they got a lot of guys who I think have qualities that the Mariners are uniquely positioned to get a lot out of. They have shown this tendency to get guys who have had really strong breakout seasons and just collect them at that point. Josh Storrs is one of those. A bunch of the guys that they drafted last year, they like Cape Cod performers. They got a lot of those in this draft. But it's not something that, like, maybe shows up on draft day.
I feel like it maybe is almost, to go deeper into the food analogy, the Mariners are, like, on a paleo diet, and that might work for them.
Is the paleo diet pitchers? Did cavemen eat pitchers?
Well, it's like it's meat and, you know, it's like it's meat and veggies. Like, they, I don't know, the specifications of what players are what foods, but it's like, you know, if you consider this the vegetables of a draft, like they are limiting themselves to certain profiles of players, and that's it, seemingly the type of player that they can develop really well. But, you know, if they are only able to develop a certain type of player, and that doesn't include, you know, the most physically talented players out there oftentimes...
Is that good development?
Like, you know, or is that enough? So
it's not balanced.
Exactly.
But in counterpoint, I would say, like, I've ragged on Detroit for a long time about it having a super arms heavy system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this one draft, so I would say the big caveat to this is if the Mariners, you know, somehow wind up with a similar draft position next year, if games are played and they're somehow able to work themselves even higher, they could have one draft like this, like Detroit did. Detroit just filled all the holes in that system in, like, one fell swoop. So
that's tough. I mean, you look back, though, at the last 5 years, and at least for Detroit, while they've been pitcher heavy, at least they've, like, dipped their toes into the middle infield market in rounds 1 through 10 in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
Seattle had, like, five in the last 47 picks in the first 10 rounds in the last 5 years, and they've taken 5 middle infielders, and 3 of them have been seniors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're so extreme as to almost, like, be, like, extreme. A mockery of it.
But I'll also,
well, we'll never want to be too far on the extremes.
I want to make another counterpoint just to, like, where the team should be drafting. I would argue that as it pertains to farm systems, value is value is value is value. So if the team uses that value, if they use their liquidable assets to trade, or it doesn't matter how they use them, if they utilize them to bring in the players that they want, then, you know, all's well that ends well. You know, it's a means to an end.
I mean, I think that's a fair point in that it, that does get lost in this, is that like the players that are taken now don't, like, that's not what you're stuck with. Stuck. That's not like what the farm system is going to be. That's not what the roster is going to be just set in stone. Like, if you need to at pretty much any point, you can always trade for prospects that are up the middle, or you can trade for, you know, I mean, you can trade for a JP Crawford or Shed Long, you know, because you have, I mean, that's how they got Shed Long, because they had an excess in having in good outfield prospects, so they were able to trade Josh Stowers and like get an immediate, you know, playable, near, you know, MLB ready middle infield prospect in Shed Long. So like, it is, in a sense, like, it's not that consequential necessarily, because if they can develop these guys and consistently develop guys who then other teams want to trade for, that's fine. The problem, you know, the point though is like, okay, but then those guys come in, can you get the most out of those guys who you don't have anyone necessarily like, you know, are you able to get those? And maybe, I mean, maybe that's worrying about,
and it doesn't
gnats, but
it doesn't take into consideration where this team's going to spend either. Like Kate and I were talking about last night, we don't know, like, they're going to spend on an infielder at some point in the next 2 or 3 years. So we have to, I just think the Mariners they're just kind of this exercise in trust and this exercise in patience, because
does this fan base pretty understandably not have either of those, right?
Not, you know, like, not our biggest asset.
Yeah.
But like, you look at 2019 and Seattle drafted Brandon Williamson, and they drafted Josh Stowers the year before that at the top of the draft. And, you know, those are just two guys that at the time of the draft, those are highly visible, highly excitable picks. And Seattle walked away from them with guys that nobody largely had heard of. And, you know, this year they walk away with pick 64 with a Connor Phillips who nobody largely had heard of. So they turned Josh Stowers into Shed Long, and Brandon Williamson appears to be a value that's about right for where he was picked. So you just kind of have to trust the front office. I mean, the thing about DePoto and his entire front office is, no, we haven't been to the playoffs yet, but you can't argue with the results of the minor league system. I mean, they've turned it on its head.
Yeah, it is. I think one of the potentially one of the biggest frustrations of not having games this year thus far is that you're not like getting to see full seasons from JP Crawford, from Shed Long, from Kyle Lewis, from Jake Fraley. You know, getting to see potentially Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelnick debut. I mean, those are the type of things where it's like, okay, you start to feel like beyond, you know, the three of us and you know, on staff who are, you know, focused, you know, looking at the magnifying glass at this stuff every day, you know, people can start to develop a degree of trust because they're seeing results, you know, on a daily basis. And I don't think we're getting, or, you know, develop an understanding of why things aren't working if that is how it goes down. But, it's hard to trust necessarily just based on minor league results, even if it is deserved or things are working. Joe, you started to allude to this a bit, and I would love to get into it because I have a sense of what your answer is. So from Chris W. at ZipKidCW on Twitter, just a reasonable pairing of questions here. Which day two pick are you most excited about, and which day two pick has the highest upside if they put it all together, and what would that look like?
Yeah, this is a really hard question simply because, like Caden Polkovich, who I'd seen very briefly on the Cape, Taylor Dollard, I haven't watched any of, Connor Phillips, I hadn't even read on. So those three immediately are eliminated for me. Tyler Keenan, John, you and I had done a lot of research on him, but like at best, he's like Pedro Alvarez. Like at best, he's going to be a guy that hits, you know, 270 and hits 35 home runs and
like a,
literally
yeah, like a 120. I mean, I think I compared Hunter Dozier was the comp where it's like, this is a bad defensive third baseman probably, but he hits enough. Like he's an above average hitter. If so you just like think, it balances out.
Like at best, Tyler Keenan is Dan Vogelbach, except with a little bit more, like, I mean, marginally more defensive value at a different position. So for me, the answer is easy in that it's Zach DeLoach. And I've been watching Zach DeLoach since last July. And I love the talent. Personally, it looks like MLB.com had him as just inside the top 80. I had him at like 45 to 50. So I really think that we got a good value in Zach DeLoach. I would put him just above Jake Fraley on the Mariners' top prospect list because he's got more natural power. He doesn't have to, go all out for it. He can get to it a lot easier in game. So I think the answer is pretty easily Zach DeLoach in this one. But I'll preface that by saying the Mariners might think it's Connor Phillips, but none of us know enough about the guy.
Yes. So that was going to be my answer to this. Yeah. Question is, sorry. I think if we're going to say that there's a, because I mean, again, there are like six picks and obviously none of us are picking Emerson Hancock. So that leaves a pretty thin spread for the rest of us to pick. I think Phillips is, we were saying there's no preps. He is basically a prep. I mean, he's a year out of, he's 19. Like a got left behind kid, got repeating the 12th grade kind of prospect. So he would be old if he was a high schooler, right? Because he's 19. But he's 37 days past his 19th birthday. He's not old at all.
He's basically a prep.
He committed to LSU and then didn't get the signing bonus he wanted when he was drafted by the Blue Jays really late. I don't know if he was seen as like a tough sign or just not advanced enough. I think it's probably more of that. So he went off and just pitched in a JUCO for a while so that he would be draft eligible again this year. So smart decision for him. He's getting a way bigger payday than he would have. Tough for us because, like you said, very difficult to the JUCO. God bless their hearts. Bless their hearts. The JUCO camera work is not the best. I promise not to complain about the camera at Modesto for like at least another year.
I will not, but it's very brave of you. It's good of you.
But it's worse than that, really. But anyway, so it's difficult to get looks at him. But if you just look at, there's whispers that there's that he's kind of an analytics darling. I could not find anything about that. I'm going to do a deeper dive and see if that information is out there anywhere. But obviously the Mariners saw something or liked something in him. I think he is a big upside pick. He's the only really, I think, big upside pick from that standpoint, at least looking at a prep. As far as, like, I think he's further away from his ceiling than any of these other guys. So if you want to, like, latch on and watch someone develop, it's still a pitcher. So it's still like, I mean, we know you guys can do that. It's not really, not as much of a challenge as I would like. But that would definitely be my pick.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think this is where the sort of lack of athleticism, so to speak, comes through in terms of the upside play, because you've got, you know, a couple pitchers, and I think you're right about Phillips in him being sort of, because he's just an unknown, he may be the most sort of tantalizing, but like DeLoach, I like his swing. He's also pretty likely a corner outfielder, which, you know, sort of limits the upside a bit. You've got I literally just can't remember his name. Caden Polkovich.
Yeah, Polkovich. it's a little hard.
I hadn't actually said it Polkovich. Out loud. Polkovich, who essentially you know, is it looks like an interesting sort of pop, you know, poppy utility guy. And you've got Keenan, who has, again, big old bat, but like maybe is a third baseman. And that is, you know, that would be not
generous.
The, yeah. Very I mean, like, I think, like, estimation. I really do think, I think Vogelbach is over harsh on him in terms of his athleticism. Like, he has better hands. He moves more, much more fluidly. And like, if you put him at first base, he would like, he would look much more fluid than Vogelbach does. But like, he's just, you know, he's just not fast. So like, you would either have to put an extremely good defensive shortstop next to him, or you know, you just put him at first. So like, all those positions are ones where it's like the upside is naturally capped because you're only getting a, you know, one facet of the game at a really high level. So that's tough. I like Keenan a lot, and I do like Deloach, but it's not the same as, well, it is like, it, I don't know, the a bird in the hand, two in the bush kind of thing. But like, what if it's like a whole big old nest? I've had a lot of sort of suspect metaphors here tonight, and I apologize.
It's okay.
For that,
it's been a long day. It's been a long day. We are currently in what, our 12th hour of working on this.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a long day. Yeah, well, our 12th hour.
I went to bed at 1:30 last night after finishing the Hancock, you know, piece. So yeah.
Yeah.
Joe, what were you gonna say?
Well, I was just gonna say, like, I know what you're trying to say. Like, Tyler Keenan is great, and he can play third base, but if you look over to like Detroit, they've got Trey Cruz, and they've got Colt Keith, and they've got Gage Workman. And two of those are probably shortstops, but three of those can play the position. And, I mean, you look at Baltimore, and you got Jordan Westberg, and you got Anthony Servideo, and you got Kobe Mayo, three shortstops. Probably two shortstops in reality, but, like, you just would like to see the team reach for a little bit more dynamic ability, because when I made the comparison to Vogelbach, I don't think he's by any means, you know, the athlete that Vogelbach is. He's a much better asset.
He's
in that
smoother.
Regard.
He's more fluid.
Yeah, but my point is more so, it doesn't matter if you put Tyler Keenan at third base, and if Tyler Keenan listens to this, I'm excited for the player. But it doesn't matter if you put him at third base, and it doesn't matter if you put him at first base. He's not going to be an asset in any way. He's not going to provide excess value on the base paths or defensively or with his arm. Like, that's just where I struggle. Is it's boom or bust at the bat, and if the bat isn't there, then it's a huge liability, like, everywhere, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. So... We've got another question here from Chris, who had a three pack of questions that were all excellent there, and that was a little bit different tack, and that is, what undrafted seniors should we be hoping to sign? We got that question from a couple folks, D Molson at Berliv's Pipe. On Twitter, asked something similar as well.
Excuse me, that's Burl Ives' pipe? Like, Burl Ives?
That is not someone I am... That is
the
not a reference
singer,
I get.
He did all those animatronic Christmas specials. Silver and gold, silver and gold. Frosty the Snowman.
I do know Frosty the Snowman. Good Lord. It's been a while.
Never mind.
It's a very good reference and a
good
Twitter handle.
Just let me crumble into dust in peace.
No, I mean, that's on me. I should probably know that. Anyways, we've got another question from Burl Ives Pipe that we'll get to in a sec. But are there any undrafted seniors? I mean, for anyone who needs a quick refresher, the rules basically say teams can sign unlimited number of guys who are draft eligible to a maximum of $20,000 signing bonuses starting Sunday, I think. But I don't know what exactly how that will play out. Regardless, that's, you know, kind of a shitty to put a word on it, amount of money for a lot of these guys who very reasonably could have been top 10 round talents. And even if they weren't top 10 round talents, might have gotten, you know, a larger signing bonus, particularly a lot of the prep guys. So you'll see some of the seniors. I think seniors are particularly ones who can get a, you know, will be willing to sign because there's no real alternative anyway. But are there any guys who fit that bill for you that you could see Seattle potentially luring in?
I don't know if there will be senior signs, honestly. Like, I mean, maybe there will be some guys who, like, really just want to play baseball. And but generally, they kind of last to senior year for a reason. Clubs take them because they are offsetting some other spending elsewhere. I mean, it stinks, but senior signs are generally, like, kind of tools in the draft who then, you know, go on and maybe they have a few years. I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head how many senior signs, like, make it, but the numbers aren't great because the numbers aren't great for anyone to make it through baseball. So I was thinking about this and I was like, man, there's going to be such a run on free agents tomorrow. You know, you've got all the senior signs, you've got all these other guys. I don't know. I mean, first of all, you're looking at no affiliates that they have to be sent to. Like, there aren't any guys there. You haven't had the West Virginia Power who've been playing for 2 months and, like, maybe have a bunch of hurt pitching staff people, and then you can just, like, sign some of these guys and go send them out, be like, there you go, here's your uniform pants and good luck. So there's not spaces for them to play. There's not a huge pressing need. There's contraction of the minor leagues, so maybe there aren't roster spots for all of these guys. I don't think the numbers are going to be that intense. And then you have a lot of other guys who maybe have a little leverage if they go back to school. Maybe they'll re-enter as seniors. Maybe they'll retake, you know, redshirt, basically, and go back as juniors and try to test their luck next year. Maybe some of them will look into playing overseas. That's something that's coming up, too. I don't know if those guys are going to want to sign for $20,000. And I think this is a thing where it's really going to come down to relationships that scouts have built with individual players and how interested that player is in coming to play for your team. And that's where I think teams like the A's and the Angels, who have, like, furloughed their scouts and those people aren't with the organization right now / anymore, the Astros, who have cut their scouting department down hugely, like, and maybe you can just say, like, oh, we don't need those anyway. But yeah, I just wonder if the number of people who sign over this weekend is going to be as intense as, like, I had kind of originally thought of it as, like, a feeding frenzy almost. And I don't think that'll be the case.
I think you're right. I think at most you're going to see a handful of guys sign with each team, like five or less. It's going to be strictly college seniors. And unfortunately for the Mariners, as was, you know, widely reported, they're just kind of tucked away in the corner of the country. And the state of Washington isn't really a hotbed for talent.
Yeah, there's no guys who are like, I'm coming home to play for my hometown Mariners.
There's
like three of those guys every year, and we sign them anyway.
We
get the Austin Shentons, we get the Garrett Westbergs, and those guys, I mean, we cut Garrett Westberg loose after he had, like, I don't know, a half dozen innings or something ridiculous. Yeah.
And
like
Austin
that,
Shenton was only, he was a draft eligible sophomore. So, like, or was he a JC or was he a draft eligible sophomore?
No, he wasn't a JC.
But didn't he went to JC and then transferred to
he was Florida
South
International.
Florida. Yeah.
Wasn't he Florida International?
It was one FIU because I always repeatedly have mixed it up with FSU.
Yeah. So, but, like, you look at Austin Shenton and he had two more years of eligibility. So, like, the chances of him making it to his senior year were pretty low. I do think there's a couple of guys that maybe you could look out for. The first one is AJ Block. He's a left-handed pitcher out of WSU. I think he's from Bellevue. He's a big kid. I think he's like 6'5", 225 pounds. Good strikeout to walk ratio, 34 strikeouts and 5 walks in 27 innings. He's like 91 to 93 on the mound with a decent slider. He's definitely, like, I'm a Coug, and I'm definitely going to say he's an organizational guy. He's never posted, like, great numbers by any means in Pullman, so I wouldn't expect him to be, like, he's always had an ERA that floats around four, so I wouldn't expect him to be, like, a guy that, you know, breaks out in any way. The other one that I would point out would be Christian Jones, who was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Washington in 2016, and he went to UW. Kind of played all over the field, and he's hit, like, you know, 240 to 260 all along the way, and he's just never put it together. So those are a couple of seniors that are local. They make sense, and you might see some other, you know, small pop-up kids from, like, Seattle University or, you know, small schools. But by and large, there's not going to be a lot of guys being signed. Although, actually, let me add one more thing. If there was a position group that I was thinking Seattle did have a good shot at bringing kids up from the South or from the Midwest, like power reliever arms, they've done such a good job developing those over the years that, you know, you could see like John McMillan or people like that maybe come up.
Well, I was going to say, like, the only, because I 100% agree with what you guys said. And I think Seattle has, for what it's worth, had a few undrafted free agents that have gotten themselves into a little bit of prospect shine in the past couple of years. You know, Ray Kerr was an undrafted free agent. I actually don't remember where Ray Kerr was from, but, you know, essentially had turned into a guy they sent to the Arizona Fall League and really opened some eyes as a lefty throwing in the upper 90s. Through, you know, I mean, obviously a ton of work from him and from the Mariners continuing to work with him and get him the right opportunity. Devin Sweet, another guy who's out of North Carolina, not the University of North Carolina, but the state itself, and was an undrafted guy, you know, initially started in the bullpen and with some tweaks is now, like, not a nothing starting pitching prospect who maybe ends up in the bullpen again, but, like, has been dominant at every step, you know, every stage so far. So, like, you know, those guys also had the chance to sign with every team in the league and didn't. They signed with the Mariners. And I think that comes back to, Kate, as you said, the relationships. Like, the Mariners were in contact with, the Mariners had a scout in contact with Devin Sweet, and they said, like, they called him and said, like, hey, stay, like, ready, like, stay ready, like, we're gonna, you know, reach out to you, and, like, 2 weeks after the draft, they finally called him and were like, all right, we've got, like, a spot, like, are you down to keep playing baseball, like, we will sign you today for, I forget, but, like, you know, no money, probably, like, $10,000 or something, but, like, if a guy wants to keep playing baseball, there are those guys out there, you know, I mean, whether it's like, hey, Elon has a really, you know, a guy on the, that's a senior and maybe we don't know him, but there's something intriguing there. I mean, that would be where these guys would come from. I do think there will be a few more signees than we might expect just because there will be guys who will think, well, I'm going to be old prospect wise if I don't get my pro career started, and by that point I might get passed up, so, you know, they may not see another year as, you know, even if it's a bad signing bonus, they might think, well, I gotta get this career going.
Yeah, but, being guaranteed a spot in an organization with numbers crunch happening is definitely an aspect to all this that some kids are going to take into consideration.
And yeah, I mean, and like what the right balance of those considerations is, I have no idea. But
I mean, yeah. And I think that that's where it's just, like you said, about the relationship with the scout, and it's a person by person. Some kids really don't like school. Like, they aren't going
to school. Jones did not come to play school.
They did not come to play school. They are there because they're making their parents happy, and mm-hmm. their, you know, some degree of their education is funded. Mm-hmm. Also, sometimes, and this doesn't count with draft bonuses, but organizations can say, like, look, we'll pay for you to finish school. The Yankees do that. Every guy who gets drafted by the Yankees is
like, no matter what, like,
no matter what, they is given money to finish school. Yeah,
the Mariners have done some degree. I don't know if they do it comprehensively, but I know
I think it's part of like a draft pack. Like it's part of the bonus package, the benefits package.
Yeah,
but it doesn't come out of your draft pool, so it's one of those perks that they can offer.
Which is like, I mean, that is, and like, you know, it sucks that it's like, okay, we'll only sign, but like, you know, that is a huge thing, right? It's like, okay, we'll go play baseball for a few years, be, you know, obviously pretty ridiculously underpaid and like have some rough conditions, but like at a certain point when you're done with this, you can go get an education. Like,
well, it's a lot such of them, a baseline, I mean, thing. Wade did his after, but a lot of them do it while they're in the minors. Joseph Odom just finished his degree from Alabama while he was in the system, which I love Joe Odom. He's a solid kid. But anyway, can I throw out some names?
Yeah, please do.
Are we throwing out names? Okay. I like Tanner. God, they all have the same name. Bibby. Yeah, Tanner, Tyler, Taylor. This one is Gene Tanner, Bibby. Yes, they are all named Tyler. He's from Cal State Fullerton. I've always been surprised that we have not gotten a Fullerton guy into the system. And I think it's more just like...
There was one a few years ago, wasn't there? I remember Ethan being...
He was super excited about a Fullerton. But, you know, you would think that that would be a pretty steady pipeline for them because Fullerton produces the kinds of pitchers, the crafty righties who throw a lot of strikes that, like, the team really likes. I think they just have not had an opportunity to draft, like, the Colton Eastman, who I thought was an ideal target for them a few years ago. Anyway, Tanner. I will get his name right at some point. Bibby would be a good candidate for that. And this kind of factors into one of the questions that we got. The question we got from Brandon Everfolly at Fire Breath Onion, which is an excellent handle. What's the one position you feel they ignored and maybe shouldn't have? I said last night, Joe can attest to this, I said I want a catcher. They drafted no catchers. There's no catcher. The system is still extremely catching thin. And that is a difficult position to get internationally. You have to kind of fall into that. Catchers tend to be college white dudes. I hate to say that, but that is your, if you look around, like, who is catching in MLB right now or in the ranks of the upper minors, like, that's something that American baseball is pretty good at developing, is like the big-bodied catcher. So Kale Emshoff didn't go. I was really surprised by that. I had him as a list of my targets.
I can't believe Kale Emshoff didn't get picked.
I am shocked. Maybe he wanted a ton of money. Maybe did he redshirt? He redshirted, right?
Yeah.
Is he a sophomore?
I did hear that he had a reasonably big number, but when power at that position is so hot, I figured someone was definitely going to pop.
So I guess there's no way he signs. There's probably no way he signs for. I think didn't Corey Collins go?
I didn't see him go.
I thought he got picked, but there's got to be a catcher out there somewhere. But even the guy from Virginia Tech, whose name I continually get wrong, Carson Taylor. I'm pretty sure that's it.
He got taken. Correct. Yes.
Yes. I knew, just had to like move the right pieces of the general.
There was
you beautiful minded Carson Tucker and Cole Tucker out of the way there.
Two thirds of teams didn't take a catcher.
Yeah, I just, where are you gonna, like, it's, where are you guys gonna get catchers? Where are they gonna come from?
You could definitely see senior signs there. It wouldn't surprise me. Like,
very much.
Brooks Asher could go. Brett Auerbach could go. I mean, there's definitely some senior catchers out there that are gonna get some attention.
Yeah, I mean, at that point though, like, I guess at this point there's really not that much of a difference between kind of the lower ceiling college catchers we already have in the system. Yeah. So,
well, and for a lot,
man,
of these guys,
I hope Kyle Raleigh works out is the end of that story.
I mean, for a lot of these guys, I mean, I do really wonder, like, how much better does next year look? Like, if the draft is 10 rounds. Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe it's 20 rounds next year, but like, is the, you know, and like, what is the economic situation for the game? Like, is ownership going to be suddenly willing to go back and, you know, give out a bunch of bonuses to the post, you know, slot value guys? Like, some teams might, but, you know, like the Royals might continue to be like, yeah, this is an opportunity for us to you know, get ahead again. But like, a lot of teams may just not. And so, I mean, it really is. I think if there is a rush of guys who sign, that may honestly push more guys to be inclined to sign as well. Cause, you know, that it's just, I don't know what it's going to look like.
It's unprecedented. I mean, it's just unprecedented. Mm-hmm. None of us have gone through this. We haven't experienced this. But like Kate was saying, I mean, I think Cale Emshoff is going to be a guy as an undrafted free agent that's going to be able to command a decent chunk of change.
Yeah. I do want to say, because we also have a question, or just in general addressing the sort of what they ignored and maybe shouldn't have, question that Kate asked, like, there's not, you know, even going back to our first question, like in the like not dregs, because it's 6th through 10th rounders, but like in the excess guys of this, you know, who haven't already been taken, there is not going to be nearly as great a pool of athletic players who can play middle infield who Seattle is going to be able to lure. There are probably going to be a number of guys who fit the build of like, yeah, a reliever, or yeah, like, you know, a defense for glove first catcher who like wants to get in or has some tool, or maybe even, you know, like a starter who like doesn't want to risk getting hurt again. Like those, but those super, you know, those highly athletic middle infield type guys and middle of the field kind of guys, like those guys are very unlikely to just be like, yeah, I'll take $20,000 and not go back and try and have a good year and then get picked in the top 10. Like, and that's where, I mean, like, can you guys name for me who is the likely starting shortstop in Modesto or West Virginia or Arkansas right now?
Caballero.
Jose Caballero, who is probably a second baseman. Probably should be a second baseman, right? Like,
no, absolutely.
Like, you know, Cesar Torres Jr.? Like,
the
like,
bat. Right? Oh, the bat is right. So horrendous.
I mean, like, you know, like Pat Frick is something like, and like Arkansas,
Matt Sanders,
you've got,
I guess.
Yeah, Matt Sanders. Like, and Arkansas has like Connor Kopach, who's, I mean, like, it's just every level of. He may have gotten cut at like every level of the system beyond, you know, AAA and the bigs, and
yeah,
and wherever
rough.
You're putting Noelvi Marte and like Caracuto if he's healthy, like there
yeah,
is a,
like...
there is not only, I mean, there's a huge opportunity, but there's also like it's not so much even about drafting for need as it is who can you give opportunities to make the most of themselves, and the Mariners have so many guys that they're going to be running out in the middle of the infield who are org guys, unfortunately, most likely. And that is
bad.
I mean, it's bad. And it, well, it's bad. And it's also like, it's a missed opportunity. So that's where I'm frustrated with this. Cause it's like, even if they'd just taken one, you know, like a guy, like, I mean, Trey Cruz went earlier than I expected. So, you know, you don't get
Trey
Cruz.
Let's go ahead. Like, let us all air our Harold Cole grievances.
Shall we? Well, and like Harold Cole was a guy I thought that the Mariners could have, should have taken 5th round, still there, taken a number of college guys. You probably have some pool work that you could work with, but like, even if it's not a high school guy, where it's like you're probably not putting a high school shortstop immediately up into, you know, low A or high A, but like, I don't know, like, you know, Anthony Servideo or what's his face, the
Hayden,
Yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah, my boy, Hayden Cantrell.
Yes, exactly. Like Hayden Cantrell.
My heart, that was maybe the heart. The heartbreaker was when I lost out on my boy Baron Radcliffe.
Yeah. And at the death of the draft too.
Yeah, but like, pretty close to the end when I had just been hoping like, oh, maybe they'll be able to get him as a free agent. Yeah. No.
But yeah,
Hayden Cantrell was a kick
exactly
in the teeth as
well.
Exactly,
like the kind of guy where it's like, okay, like this guy probably isn't high upside middle infield, but it's like this guy's a guy who you can put in the middle infield, and at every step of the way, it makes sense that this guy may make the big leagues and have a positive role in the big leagues at some point. So you feel good about putting this guy in to start the lineup every day, and you don't feel like...
That's why they got Caden Polklovich, who I recognize. Like, as when he got picked, I was like, oh, they're not taking Hayden Kendrick, because that's a very...
That's
yes. Very similar
like,
skill set.
I think we do need to give like 2 minutes to Caden.
Yes,
Polkovich.
Yes. He is the one I've most heavily overlooked here. So I would like to hear a little bit more about this. Because the main issue I'm running into there is like seeing, okay, I've seen him at second base. That's fine. I've seen people say, oh, well, you should just put him in center field. Okay. But like, does that mean he's not qualified to play either of those positions? Or is it he is good at multiple positions? Like what is give me some more on Polkovich here.
I only watched a little bit of him at when the Cape was going on, and I talked to Ralph Lifshitz about Caden a little bit, and like he's fun. I mean, he's 5'8", he's 165 pounds, he is me, it's fun.
Yeah, we were gonna fun. Say he was.
See,
I believe we called him
this
muscle
is male privilege. Like you can always, there will always be someone as diverse as baseball is. There will always be someone who kind of looks like you.
Maybe, but I can also say there is unequivocally not very many of them, and the ones that are my size generally don't hit tanks. And
Joe, where is your HDMH tattoo?
I don't have that
height
tattoo.
Height doesn't measure heart. Well, I mean, you need to get one.
I do have a family tattoo. It says family on my... It's on my bicep, too. Damn, I'm not winning this at all. And then...
are not coming off well in this.
I'm not going to lie. I have a pretty dope my tattoo. But anyways...
We'll get Caden one as well to
but
match.
But every picture I take, I have my shirt on. but no, like, okay, so like Polkovich is super fun. He's 5'8", 165, and from the people that I've talked to and from like the little bit of tape that I watched, like, dude's got some power. Like he's got some juice in his bat. But the arm doesn't really play in any corners or on the left side of the infield. So yeah, he's like second base, center field strictly. He really reminds me a lot of Dylan Moore, like the profile that Dylan Moore provides, except Dylan Moore can play shortstop.
I'm actually psyched to see someone smaller than Dylan Moore hit the ball with the same and just watch Kate's brain explode.
Why do you want my brain to explode, John? Why? You saw how I reacted to Dylan Moore hitting those.
I
can't even handle it.
If Caden Polkovich turns into like the... Actually, you know what? Mark McLemore is kind of got the diminutive stature, and he's a better power hitter, it sounds like, than McLemore. But it's been a while since Seattle has just had that utility guy that they throw out there 5 nights a week at different positions and actually contributes offensively. Like, no offense to Dylan Moore. I love his 430-foot home runs, but, like, his 40% daddy hack strikeouts are a little bit of an issue.
No. I mean, so, even if he like ends up, because I think Shed Long has a stronger arm than Polkovich, just particularly from like being a catcher for so long.
And third baseman,
yeah. So like, but I mean, that in size, in swing intensity, you know, I mean, that honestly is a neat profile and sort of pathway to follow that you know, works with the McLemore thing as well, of like, you know, this guy, you know, it is a bit of a sum of his parts guy, but like, it's not a dull, it's not the dull Andrew Romine type of middle of utility.
And you know what? Caden Polkovich, I'm calling it now, like, December's going to roll around, we will have completely forgotten about Caden Polkovich. Mm-hmm. He's going to pop up in 2024, like just totally randomly, and we're going to take him for granted for 6 years. He's going to be like a staple in the Mariners bench 4 nights a week, and we'll never applaud him. And he's gonna play 6 years here. He's gonna hit like 270. He'll hit 90 home runs for the Mariners, and then he'll move on. And we're just not even gonna, you know, give him the due that he's probably deserving.
Joe, Safeco Field once started a Sean O'Reilly chant. I think if Caden Polkovich hits 270, there will be some appreciation for it.
He's got the personality for it, too.
No, absolutely. Right? Like he's got a tude in a fun way.
Brendan Ryan once hit 185, and people were banging their desks when he was removed from the lineup.
That's fair. Sorry, Kate, go ahead.
Polkovich is definitely my favorite as far as like just a personality upside, but don't sleep on Taylor Dullard either, who has a bunch of famous friends. I guess he grew up playing Little League with Jack Flaherty and
the Turturro family?
The Turturro family, yeah. If you have any choice in the matter, get born in Sherman Oaks, California to a fairly upwardly mobile family, I guess, because you will run into a lot of people.
Yeah.
Man, California baseball is a trip. I wanted to say that Greg Johns recently published an article on Connor Phillips, saying that is somebody who the Mariners were interested in when he was a high schooler and have been watching him. They loved him. They targeted him. So that was someone that they clearly had an eye on. And Scott Hunter compares him to Trevor Bauer. The way he walks into the ballpark, his throwing program, even his delivery. I'm assuming, too, that means that he's very intellectual about his pitching. And hopefully that's where the similarities end somewhat. Although Trevor Bauer has done a lot this pandemic to kind of...
Real mixed bag.
Why didn't we draft a Nick Heath?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need. But then again, we need like someone with a social media presence that does that too. Like, I don't know, Hayden Cantrell.
I rest my case. Yeah.
But anyway, it's interesting to see. Like, they definitely thought that was somebody that they've been watching for a long time, and somebody that they consider as having huge upside. And we saw them kind of do that with Brandon Williamson too last year, right? Yeah. Like, they do, as far as pitching goes, seem to find something that others in the industry don't always see. So I am encouraged about Connor Phillips. And God, their names are just so boring. They're so hard for me to remember.
That is what it is.
Connor
That's why
Phillips.
We're so high on Caden Polkovich.
Because it really is. It really is, because I cannot totally...
Well, let's jump onto this Brandon Kebba question.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Good one.
Yeah, so go ahead, John. Okay, I'll ask the question, because I know you're the D-Loach enthusiast in particular. So Brandon Kebba asks, at K3BBA on Twitter... DeLoach swing comp to Yelich? Am I crazy? Also, player comp for Tyler Keenan, Moustakas? Personally wanted Servideo over Polkovich, but think that out of all the draftees, he stands to make the biggest strides. Overall, B. Looking forward to undrafted pool. So a lot of things we've covered there. I'll say Hunter Dozier is my comp on Keenan there real quick.
Somebody meanly put a Mike Karp comp to Tyler Keenan.
Yeah, I saw that, and
It doesn't...
I think it's because they're both kind of gingers, right?
Yeah, but
they're both giant gingers. Like, why don't you just comp him to Bucky Jacobson?
And Karp also was an outfield. I mean, maybe I'm forgetting Karp being
Whoever made that comp. I did see the comp, and like...
I mean, maybe offensively. I guess I don't remember my Karp's swing that well. Anyways, tell me about Delicious swing.
I agree on the B grade. I think that's a good... I think that's a good fair grade for the draft. But on Delicious swing... I actually had a similar thought when I watched the swing, but I think most of it just comes from when he gets a hold of one, he kind of limps the bat over his back, kind of like how Yelich does when he knows he got one. There's a little bit of the leg kick where he brings his knees entirely together, but I think Yelich gets into his legs a little bit more than Deloach does, and it sounds like Deloach has employed a little bit of a toe tap this year. I haven't seen too much of that, but yeah, I think there's like little tiny pieces of the swing that don't actually have to do with the mechanics of the swing that are similar to Yelich, but I wouldn't necessarily make a direct swing comp on that. And then my player comp for Tyler Keenan, I think I mentioned it earlier, is Pedro Alvarez, just kind of a boomer bust. And like strictly like 2015 Pedro Alvarez, like after the pizza, you know?
Was it a pizza or... Oh, yeah. What? No, I'm mixing up with Randall Simon, who attacked a hot dog with a bat.
Oh, no, or Jesus Montero. No, just corner, like a guy that shouldn't be, like Pablo Sandoval, a guy that shouldn't be playing third base but happens to be playing third base at an outlierish size. But Pedro Alvarez would be my performance and body comp.
Okay, well, let's go to a question from Kyle Geller here at Kyle Geller, G-E-H-L-E-R. Hoping that's Geller, not Geller. But do you expect next year's draft to be even deeper with a high number of high schoolers going the JUCO route? And obviously, we'll have some undrafted guys going, but do you guys expect that there will be just an absolute glut of guys again next year like that?
I don't think so. Not from, like, not guys that you've heard of. All the guys that didn't make it to an organization are going to, like, you know, Vanderbilt and Arkansas. And if you go that route, you have to wait until you turn 21 or 3 years after you graduate high school. So you might see more pop-ups like Connor Phillips that, you know, shoot up. But they're not going to be guys that, you know on draft day per se. Like, you're not going to think there's excess value, if that makes sense. That would be my expectation.
That's fair. I mean, so what about like guys like we had Blade Tidwell and like just like, I mean, not necessarily Harold Cole, but like you know, just and some of those pop-up guys who are you know, popping up this summer, and you know, may think like Phillips. I am my inclination is you'll see more. I think it's probably not going to be like staggering, but I mean, there are a lot of guys right now who you know, who just are being pushed down the line as a result of there not being as many guys
going. I think bigger. We'll see a log jam in a few years after all the kids this year who should have been drafted for the prep kids are eligible for the draft again. And they might have to start looking at like switching up the draft eligibility rules just to smooth it out a little, so there isn't a huge chunk in a couple of years of kids who all opted to go to college instead of going into the draft. Because this draft was, I mean, completely light on high school players for that reason. Like, after a certain point, unless teams had compensated in earlier rounds by going under slot in order to take players later, just pretty light on high school. I think day one was like 20 college players to 10 high school players, and that's where
they said it was a record. I mean, they said it was a record for like the first three or four rounds. Yeah,
for lowest number of college of high school players. Yeah,
I do so think
something has to be done about that.
The JUCO ranks may not see. You may see more pop-ups next year, and it may be more of a narrative going after those guys in, you know, rounds 3 through 5 through 10. But the real conversation is going to be in 2023 when, you know, you talk about the Kevin Paradas, you talk about the Tanner Witts, you talk about some of these guys that have no business going to school. They're that talented. They should be here.
Drew Bowser, even, right?
Drew Bowser. Yeah, so I think those guys, you're going to see a really, really good college class in 2023. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the better classes we've maybe ever seen. That might be a little preemptive, but...
Yeah. Okay, well, let's sort of wrap up here with a couple interconnected questions here. We're now going to get to that Burl Ives pipe question. which is what is the deepest position now in the system? And then the subsequent question from Jacob Wall at JWall1996 was, what do you think the outfield will look like in the next 5 years? A lot of intriguing players to fill the three spots. So you guys may think it's the outfield. I don't know. I want to hear what you guys think. But what position group do you think you're most excited about?
It's kind of a toss-up. I guess outfielders, just because, you know, you've got five of them in the top 10 with Lewis, Fraley, Rodriguez, and Kelnick, and now I think Deloach kind of fits right in there with Fraley and Lewis. But I don't know, like, at the same time, Kirby and Gilbert and Justin Dunn and now Hancock, that's really tough. I would say outfielders. And then to the second part of that question, what it's going to look like, dude, your guess is as good as mine. I would think that Kelenic will definitely be in it. I think the odds are Julio Rodriguez will probably be in it. And then I don't think Kyle Lewis is going to be in the outfield. He may be DHing. And then, you know, the other spot's either going to be Fraley or Deloach, or I don't know. I can't assume all five of these guys are still going to be Mariners in 3 years. Like, if I'm being totally honest, that's not even counting Jonathan Clase or Noelvi Marte if he's forced out there.
I don't think Noelvi Marte will be forced to the outfield. I think he probably bottoms out somewhere in the dirt.
Third base, at least.
He is athletic, but
yeah, I agree.
But yeah, it is the outfield crunch, looming crunch is a complicated situation to think about, and it starts getting to be an issue in the next couple years with Julio and Jared. So that, I think, is the most stat. I don't know where Zach Deloach goes, even. There's going to have to be some wheeling and dealing. And obviously, like, you want depth. And maybe you, I don't know, you can't really make any of them. The thing is, like, when you just don't have, they're going to have to trade some of them for shortstops eventually. If J.P. Crawford doesn't work out. Or, like, maybe you get a lower level guy. And again, it's not the worst thing to have a lot of depth in one particular area and make a good trade. So I'm not super worried about that. But yeah, I think positionally, all you can say, if you could say going into the draft this year that the Mariners' strengths were pitching and outfield, you could have said that last year, I think. And you're still going to be just saying the same thing. So it's frustrating not to see any movement on that front.
They very much sort of leaned into their strengths instead of shoring up their weaknesses in this draft, which last year was all about shoring up their weakness. There was not pitching depth in the system. And that's that was, true. You know, while we were looking at this draft and that draft and thinking, man, this, it's too bad. This pitching, you know, the pitching depth sucks, but this draft isn't that great for pitching. They, you know, bulldozed right through that anyway. And that, you know, and it's looking reasonably good for the guys they got, but, it was, I think, somewhat surprising, I guess. I did think that they were going to say, okay, we've covered pitching. I mean, obviously you can never have too much pitching, but like, we have, you know, really shored this up. We're going to find some ways to sort of balance out our system now. And again, maybe
that's next year's draft. Maybe next year's draft is just going to be position palooza. Mm-hmm.
But you know, it, I think they got good players. I just, I'm a little bit, I'm more excited about the outfielders just still based on that upside. But I mean, it's really, it is a law firm that they have got there of Hancock, Gilbert, and Kirby, that is going to be coming up through the ranks, and all you need is really, I mean, even if, whether Sheffield and Dunn, either of them stick in the rotation, I think they are going to be good big league pitchers in some capacity. And the lack of, you know, pressure on those guys to be the guys is really good. But it comes at the expense of right now it looks like a lot, you know, pretty much every position player on the in the infield there is needs to be the guy, because there's no one coming for a little while unless they go in free agency. So
I will
did we do in like what we wanted from the draft? Because I went 0-for. I did not get Nick Gonzalez. I did not get any of the day two targets that I had outlined. I did not get a catcher. The closest I got probably is, oh my God, Kaden Polklovich. I'm going to have to learn that name. I asked for somebody with personality, so I guess that was the only item I got to cross off of my wish list. How about you guys?
I was 1-for-5, and it's not even a full one. It's like two halves. Because I was like, you could have given me Emerson Hancock or Nick Gonzalez, and I would have been happy. So I got one of those, so that's like half a point.
Yeah.
And
I will say, like, I was very attached to Nick Gonzalez, but I feel like I've been very unfair to Emerson Hancock because I think he has sort of resting bitch face. Like, he's
resting
just
pitch
got,
face.
He Please. Has resting pitch face, and I should be, I thought, I just, and I've seen him on the mound primarily, so I was like, man, that guy's a dick. But he is apparently only that on the mound and is super nice and wonderful in his personal life, which is exactly what you want, so... Yeah. I'm starting to come around on that. He still doesn't have a big personality. He's a quiet guy, but I'm much more attached to Emerson Hancock than I was at the beginning. So I guess say that I got like maybe one total if I give half points for personality and a half point for Hancock.
Yeah. The other half point I would say is the Deloach thing. And the only reason I say that is I didn't think Seattle would go after Deloach. Like, I didn't think college outfield was going to be anywhere near their radar, so I never even considered him mocked to Seattle. But if you told me Deloach was going to Seattle pre-draft, I would have been stoked. So I'll say another half point there.
Yeah, I think I got about a point and a half. Well, I mean, I explicitly did want Tyler Keenan, so that is, I think, I can't like write multiple times about a late round infielder and then not count that as a full point, because like that just was very cool. That like
you're so happy.
I was really happy, and I remain very happy about him. And yeah, I think he is. I mean, there is a lot of Cal Raleigh in his swing. And just, you know, general personality. Like, there's a bunch of great mic'd up videos from Ole Miss of him, and he's just very, like, the most quintessential, like, jolly, gigantic baseball player from the South. Like, it was a trip for me, like, having played, like, through college baseball and just, like, spending most of my summers, like, much of my life, you know, not nearly to the degree of quality of any of these players, but like, you know, doesn't matter the quality. People are still saying the same things, like, oh, that's a nuke, dude. Like, oh, dropping tanks. Like, I mean, just like, it was like weirdly comforting to just hear this goof. Like, I saw a lot of some of my favorite teammates in him there. It was like, yeah. This is like an entertaining guy. I like immediately see the appeal of this, in addition to, obviously, you know, the skill set that plays. And then Hancock, like, I feel similarly about, yeah, it's frustrating because I liked Gonzalez and I think he was something that the system could have really used. But Hancock, when I look at it, like, looking at the board at the time when the Mariners picked, they could have taken Veen. They didn't. But they took, I think, the pitcher and probably the guy who has, you know, one of the, you know, two or three guys who are best suited to turning into an impact talent at the big league level. And it's very clear to see the pathway for that. And that's, that is exciting. And I've wanted an impact talent out of this draft, and the fact that they didn't go for athleticism or tools bummed me out beyond that. But the fact that they went for a clear guy who it's like, yes, looks like an ace, quacks like an ace. Like, I mean, you know, all of those things where it's like, yeah, Logan Gorbach doing really well and is like turning into this like middle or top of the rotation potential kind of guy. Like, yeah, George Kirby has like some of these tools, but it's like, here's a guy has all those sort of control characteristics. His velocity is even better. The, you know, a lot of the analytics on his stuff are very promising if they can even just work a little more on it. And he dominated the best college baseball players in the country. And as, you know, as a 20-year-old, and was, you know, probably going to do just fine ultimately this spring again. So
Seattle
and
fan.
Will hopefully, as my favorite thing about him potentially, really stick it to Keith Law. So that's really one of the things I'm most excited about, is for both for Emerson Hancock and Justin Dunn, both of whom have been because Law does this. He picks prospects he just doesn't like. He's done the same thing with Madrigal. He's just like, I'm the low one on the, you know, and he makes a like personality out of disliking those prospects. I don't like it personally. But he's pegged Hancock. Hancock is in his crosshairs. Does not think he's very good because of the fastball didn't have results, like ace-like results, like Ace Alesi had with his. Does not thinks he has too much of a head whack. So I am just rooting extra hard for Emerson Hancock to just shove that scouting report down Keith Law's throat.
If it's any consolation to the folks that, you know, struggle with this draft for the Mariners, I do think Seattle, the farm system, passed the Braves over the last couple of days. I think Seattle's squarely the fourth best farm system in the bigs now. Atlanta had a terrible draft. Schuster was the best player that they walked away with. And
yeah, I did not care for Atlanta's draft.
Yeah, Schuster's probably the 45th best player. And pulling Emerson Hancock, it was already pretty close. So I think, you know, Seattle probably passes them now. Unfortunately, one thing you'll probably see a lot of over the next month is you will see Noelvi Marte falling off top 100 lists. And you'll see George Kirby falling off of top 100 lists. But, you know, that's at the expense of adding a top 60
But we know
prospect.
They're on the top 100 list of our heart.
And they're, I mean, all it takes is a little bit of baseball and they'll be back on.
Because guys haven't graduated off those lists this summer. And so.
Yeah, the Braves took Three Arms and Jesse Franklin. And I had not heard of either of their two back end ones, Spencer Strider or Bryce Elder. So, And Jesse Franklin, who I think is very good. We all know Jesse Franklin, but that's our. He's had a rough go of it in college at recapturing kind of his prep glory. So that's I would agree. At first when you said that, Joe, I was like, Christian Pache, Waters, like all that pitching. I rejected that out of hand. But, you know, Seattle took a bigger step forward than Atlanta did, and Atlanta's step forward was so small that I think that maybe we took a step past them.
I mean, Seattle's got four top 60 prospects before this, and the Braves have three top 60 prospects before this, and we added another one. So,
which honestly, I mean, that should have happened, right? Like, they had the sixth overall pick in the draft, and that was why I was a little... grown attached to him now, but that was why I was disappointed about Deloach, just because of the stuff that they had to pick from there that really could have, I think that was an opportunity to really, and again, it's not about what the pundits say, right? It's not about the grades you get on the draft. It's not about what other people think about your draft. It's about what you think about it, and that's, you stand behind your scouting, so.
And let's be honest, the position caught us all off guard. You know, it could have been any number.
Yeah, we could have developed some hype for him, because I definitely developed hype afterwards.
I mean, but it could have been any shortstop on the board. Any short, like, literally, it could have been, I think it could have been Trey Cruz at 43, and we would have been like, okay, you know what, right.
Yeah.
So, it's just, it was an outfielder, and that's not what anybody expected, but let me tell you, he's a damn good outfield prospect, and that's something we should be excited about.
And that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to draft best player available, and, you know, the farm system has been so poor for so long that we've been able to kind of skirt that because they needed everything. So best available was also what they needed. And even you could say that with Hancock this year. Like, they did need him because they didn't have a frontline ace. And now they have that. And, like, I love the 1-2 punch of, like, Velvet Glove Gilbert and punch you in the face Hancock. Like, the power pitcher, the finesse pitcher. That's really tough. When you're an opposing club and you have to face one of those guys one night and one of those guys the next night, ugh, no thank you. That is an unpleasant slate of games for a hitter, I think. So, you know, he was necessary. He's such an outsized talent, I think, too, that, like, you have to kind of... I think that that was enough to kind of move the system forward significantly. Yeah. And we still have money to sign Lindor, so we're all good.
Perfect.
We're all good.
Well, thank you guys for talking this through. You definitely... I definitely started this recording a little down, and I feel better about this, having talked to you, because that's actually often the case on these things. So,
listeners, we hope you feel better too. Yeah. If you came into this kind of bummed,
yeah.
It could have been worse. It wasn't. True. It wasn't too bad.
It wasn't whatever the Giants were doing.
Oh my god, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, we'll do that. Stop that here. Yeah, another time. But
if you can't say anything nice, that's it.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for following along with our draft coverage. We'll see what's next. Hopefully we'll have some undrafted signee news next week. And obviously we'll have some more write-ups on the site. But until then, we will stay safe.